Blog Talk Radio.
This is an Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production. Yes, we are here tonight. This is Russell Talk in the Deep with Martez, and I am coming to you live from Detroit, Michigan, and my job today is to talk wrestling. Now, I don't know if I'm the best at talking wrestling. I don't know if I'm the most informative of talking wrestling. I don't know if I'm the most prolific of talking wrestling, but I'm a fan. I'm a fan of this sports and entertainment world that we love so much, and that's why I do Wrestle Talk in the D as much as I can. Well, we got another good show for you tonight. We're going to be talking to a former WWE and AAA Spanish announcer, Hugo Savinovich. Hopefully I can pronounce his name correctly. About time he comes on the show. I've been trying to practice his name all day. It's probably easy for most of you all, but for me, it's relatively hard to get his name correct. I believe it's Savinovich. I guess we'll find out. I'm sure he'll correct me if I'm wrong. But again, this is your Russell Talking to D with Martez. I want to thank my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, because I understand without God that there's no Russell Talking to D. There's no me. He gives me the ability to think I could talk about wrestling. So that's what we got in store for you tonight. We'll be talking to Hugo at 7 p.m. Eastern time, which is not too far away, not too much time far away for us tonight. But we got about 13 minutes to go before we place that call to Mr. Savinovich. But I got a few things I want to talk about in these next 13 minutes, and I'm going to jump right into it because there's a lot going on in the wrestling world, and there's a lot going on in the world. Now, I'm going to leave what's going on in the world to everybody else. I don't have time to talk about that stuff. Everybody and their mama been talking about it, you know, so I'm going to leave that to them. This is a show where we're going to focus at least 90% on wrestling. I try not to step aside too much because this is a wrestling show, and the wrestling show this will be. But a lot of highlights, a lot of lowlights this week. One of the highlights this week, and really one of the highlights the last few months that I want to touch on right now is that in the person of Dr. Britt Baker. I don't know if many of you all watch AEW, but the idea and the idea of turning Dr. Britt Baker heel, making her a bad guy, bad girl, whatever you want to call it, was a brilliant idea. Whoever came up with that idea, you know, deserves a trophy if you ask me, because Dr. Britt Baker, she has been doing a phenomenal job as a heel. And she's arguably, for me, one of the most entertaining performers, whether it's promo or in the ring, that AEW has. You know, Britt Baker is one of those type of talents that whenever she comes on the screen, I have to stop what I'm doing. Now, nowadays, a lot of wrestlers, you could just continue ignoring the television. You can continue looking on your phone while they're talking or while they're wrestling, but there's something about the Dr. Britt Baker that really is connecting with me. You know, Britt Baker, she started out as a good girl. She started out as a good girl, as a face when AEW started out. That's exactly what she started off as, and that wasn't working. So they gave her the opportunity to do a heel turn, and she did it. And like I said earlier, she's been doing a phenomenal job at it, and she deserves a lot of credit for it. You know, when you get an opportunity in life to take yourself to another level, if you get an opportunity in life to better yourself, if you get an opportunity in life to position yourself for a raise or for a promotion, You need to try your best to hit a home run. And that's exactly what the doctor has been doing. Dr. Britt Baker, she's entertaining. You know, she's a great heel. You know, a great heel, you know you have a great heel when the heel is disliked by the fans. Britt Baker, she does everything that a heel is supposed to do. She says everything that a heel is supposed to do. She's one of those type of heels that will get on your nerves. You know, she's one of those type of heels that thinks the world revolves around her. And for me, and I said this earlier on, I think she's one of the best top five heels in professional wrestling today. Of course, you have MJF. He's a great heel. You got Baron Corbin. In my opinion, he's a great heel. Who else we talking about? You got Lance Archer. He's a phenomenal heel. You got Bobby Lashley. I think Bobby Lashley, even though he gets a lot of heat, Bobby Lashley, he's a phenomenal heel too. So I wanted to start the show off by recognizing the Dr. Britt Baker. We want to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we want to talk more about this. And this is Russell Talking to D on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash.
We are Kayfabe, the People's Band. We are the only sports entertainment cover band. We are going to play all of your favorite wrestling theme songs from the golden ages of the 1980s all the way up to today. From all as many wrestling promotions that you love near and dear, from the NWA days, the WCW, to the WWF, or of course we know today is WWE, Ring of Honor, or New Japan, they got some theme songs out there. We will be playing them. And there will be some songs that we're going to cover that may not necessarily be wrestling theme songs, but they may have been songs that wrestlers have used in the past. Like, for example, the late, great Junkyard Dog, Hall of Famer. Back in the day, in the early 80s, he used to come out to a very popular song by the rock group Queen, Another One Bites the Dust. That's just one example. And we are going to be playing everywhere we possibly can. Birthday parties, corporate events, wrestling shows, Comic Cons, anime conventions. We may even do a few anime songs. So, you know, we're open to a variety of things, but our bread and butter is going to be wrestling. And
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. This is Russell talking to D with Martez. You know what? I don't know if you do podcasts out there, if you host radio shows. Preparation is everything. And tonight, I'm not even gonna lie to you. I'm relatively tired. I'm dragging tonight. So if I don't sound energetic, please forgive me. I wish I had some coffee with me, but I don't. But again, we're gonna be calling on former WWE. Spanish announcer Hugo Savinovich. He is going to be joining the show in about 7 minutes. We're going to place that call to him, and we're going to really try to get deep into his career. Want to talk about how he got started with commentating, his time in WWE. I want to talk about his current position with AAA. There's so much we could talk about with Mr. Hugo Savinovich. You know, I consider us blessed. You know, we've been getting a lot of well-known wrestling people to come on this platform, Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. We've been doing this for about 4 years now. Started off as a dream, and now we're currently a player in this world of radio and podcasts. You know, people are taking notice to us, so I'm definitely thankful for that. We're talking about Britt Baker. How she's doing a phenomenal job as a heel. But I want to talk about Bayley. I think Bayley is also doing another great job as a heel on SmackDown Live. Bayley, we have for so many years, Bayley was this lovable hero. She was a hugger. You know, she's one of those wrestlers and one of those talents that you didn't think she can get mad. You know, you didn't think she can be mean. But Bayley has did a total 180. She has took a total 180, and I hear people all the time say Bayley is born. Bayley is still born. No, for me, Bayley is not born. Bayley is one of the most must-see wrestlers, must-see people on the mic. She does a great job cutting promos. She's one of the most must-see performers that WWE has right now. And this storyline that she has going on with Sasha Banks is great, and I'm just ready for them to pull the trigger on that feud. I'm suspecting that they may pull the trigger on that feud at SummerSlam, but I think that's the logical choice. It's the logical decision to have those two take on each other at SummerSlam. And ladies and gentlemen, that's a blockbuster matchup. Two of the all-time great wrestlers, Sasha Banks, Bayley. I'm not bloviating. I really believe this. Sasha Banks and Bayley are two of the best performers, two of the best wrestlers of all time. It's a reason that WWE is constantly pushing Charlotte Flair, constantly pushing Becky Lynch, constantly pushing Alexa Bliss, constantly pushing Sasha and Bayley. It's the reason that WWE is constantly pushing these guys. It's because there's something about these guys that they trust. It's like your car. Do you trust everybody to drive your car? No. Everybody can't drive your car. We would like to think that everybody can drive your car, but no, everybody can't drive your car because some people don't know how to drive. Some people don't know how to drive well. Some people are careless when they're driving. And in terms of WWE, it is so obvious that they trust a certain group of performers. They may like you. They may hire you. They may have you on their roster, but that doesn't mean that they have to, they, that doesn't mean that they will give you the ultimate trust that, like they do other performers. And I see this all the time. People are wondering why Charlotte Flair is constantly getting title opportunities and titles and championship wins. People are trying to understand why is that happening. Not only because she's Ric Flair's daughter, Charlotte Flair is a darn good wrestler. Let's give her some credit. Charlotte Flair is, she's big time. Charlotte Flair, she's no slouch. She's not a scrub. Becky Lynch, she wasn't a scrub. She wasn't a slouch. You know, same with Sasha, same with Bayley. So I don't get the backlash that these four women get. I just don't really get it. You know? Like, this has always happened in the world of wrestling. Certain superstars get big pushes. Hulk Hogan, he got a big push his whole career, for God's sakes. Stone Cold Steve Austin, he got a big push. The Rock got a big push. Triple H, he got a big push. John Cena got a big push. Got a big push for a very, very long time. The NWO got a big push. I certainly don't understand the backlash. All right, guys, it's interview time. I'm going to be calling Mr. Hugo Savinovich, former WWE Spanish commentator. He's currently a commentator for the AAA promotion. So we're going to be placing him a call in about a minute or so. So bear with me. Let's get this man a call right now. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is interview time. This is Russell talking to D. I know I said that a number of times. we got a special guest that's getting ready to join us, all-time great, in my opinion, on the announce table, or however you want to say it. But we are fortunate to have him come on this program. It's been special. It's been nice being able to talk to him off-air. You know, he's been so gracious off-air. Hopefully we do a good job with this interview. Hopefully I'm saying your name correctly before I bring you on. We're talking to Spanish announcer for the Lucha Libre AAA and former WWE Spanish commentator Hugo Savinovich. I hope I'm saying your name correctly. But let me say this. Nobody has to accept your invitation, okay? Nobody has to say yes. It could be an invitation to a birthday party. It could be an invitation to a graduation. It could be an invitation to a wedding. No one has to say yes to come on your show. So I really appreciate Mr. Savinovich for saying yes to the invitation. I want to thank him for coming on to the show. But before we bring him on, we want to give him a proper intro before we bring him on. And after the intro, we're going to bring on Mr. Hugo Savinovich. All right, ladies and gentlemen, my microphone wasn't on, but coming to Wrestle Talking to D for the very first time, we're going to be bringing on Mr. Hugo Savinovich. Mr. Hugo Savinovich, I hope I'm saying your name correctly. How are you, sir?
Señora, ahí está el misterio. La fractura de Argentina. Mira la catapulta. La cuenta. Uno, dos, por poquito.
All right, I wanted to give you a little bit of the Spanish flavor. I'm doing really, really good. Thank you for the invitation, and it's always a pleasure to share moments with people that are passionate of the wrestling industry, mm-hmm. our wrestling sports entertainment, like you are. So here we are, and let's kick it. Let's do something cool for the audience.
Oh, man, thank you. I appreciate that intro. I like the little Spanish flavor on this show. I definitely wanted to pick your brain because you've covered so many events. You know, you caught so many matches. But this is your first time on this show, and I know you probably answered this question so many times on other platforms, but how did you even get involved with wrestling as a child? I don't know when you fell in love with it, but how did you get involved with that?
Yes, unfortunately, the book that I have out, it's the translation in English is A Tangana, Ring of Temptations, but it's just in Spanish. I wasn't able to get to the translated because November 1st of last year, my wife passed away, and it's been a tough road. And 2 days after, my older sister died, so I haven't done the English translation. But the book talks about the story of a young kid in Guayaquil, Ecuador, in South America, that at five years old, it's watching TV, and he sees this masked guy with a silver mask, the silver cape, and he's wrestling against a heel, a villain from my country, that later on I will work for him, one of his shows, and also in the Dominican Republic. And his name was Monje Loco, long beard, like the crazy monk. And he was a university teacher. When I was 5 years old, I see El Santo wrestle my countryman, Monje Loco. And that TV match, when he did the topes and the what later was called here the camel clutch, but in Spanish it's called a caballo, which was given to El Santo by the patriarch of the Guerrero family, Gori Guerrero. I saw this guy, and the first time I seen Lucha Libre, and I told my mother, and that's why I tell the people that I do conferences for, leadership conferences and the youth kids that I do around the world, I said that your words, your dreams become the powerhouse that will drive you into your destiny. Because at 5 years old, I said to my mother, that's what I want to be. I want to be a professional wrestler, luchador. And then at 14 years old, in the tough streets of the Bronx, New York, this Ecuadorian kid who used to fight from 138th Street to 156th and go through gang territories, thieves, prostitution, and I had one of those old bottles of Coca-Cola, the thick ones, and I used to have that a broken piece of that, and I would carry that in my hand to make it through and not be robbed or mugged, to go to an abandoned building and then train wrestling, get beat up, bloody nose, and all that, and then I became a wrestler at 40 years old, 20 years in the ring as a wrestler, wrestled in Japan, worked with the best in the business, from the Funk Brothers to Andre the Giant, the Briscoes, worked in Japan against Giant Baba, Jumbo Tsuruta, and on my production way in my career, I also produced the guys that will become the legends later, like a young Randy Macho Man Savage, a Super Black Ninja who was Mr. Muta, and all these guys that became the big stars from Japan and United States. Everyone, with the exception of Hulk Hogan, worked with us in the Caribbean, and then they became huge stars. I also managed guys like Abdullah the Butcher, Bruiser Brody, all these guys, like Muta, Mr. Super Black Ninja, all these guys. So it was like a school for me to learn from the best and help create this great wrestling legends that we have today.
Awesome. Wow, you definitely informed. I wasn't expecting you to provide that much information, but I definitely appreciate that. how did you tap into the commentating because obviously you wrestled, but how did you tap into the commentating world and become a household name in the world of commentating? How did that formulate for you?
Yeah, I think it was destiny. I learned from a Mexican promoter that was also a professional boxer at his younger age from Mexico, a small, a very tiny guy, but he was such a brain. And if it wasn't because he was such a gambler and, you know, drank and womanized and all this stuff, which I learned the good things from him, but I also learned the bad things, which got me in trouble and four marriages and all that stuff. But the part of the microphone, he was so good at what he did. He will do live TV shows in Puerto Rico, and before Carlos and Jubica became the number one company, he controlled half of the island, and I was one of his stars. And he taught me the art, the psychology of the microphone, and that was an extension. The microphone is an extension of your thoughts, your fantasies, your vision, and that when you take it in your hands or when you use the microphone, you should have a plan and a reason why to be doing that, and also the respect to the people that are going to be watching you and listening to you. So I learned from him, and then through the years, I became the heel guy with the blonde hair, exotico guy, and I took that from a mixture of Gorgeous George and some Mexican actors, and I combined that, just like Muhammad Ali did for his character. He learned from Gorgeous George to become that that guy that used to, you know, drive the people crazy and they love to hate him. Well, I took that and I spent hours in watching myself in the mirror, just doing promos with a mirror. I had a small mirror. I had a little brush to do that. And I learned to hear what the people wanted, you know, to feel. And you become like a musician in a lot of ways that you feed from the people what they give you. And I started really learning the art of becoming that heel guy that people would love to hate, and did sensationally in Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico. Yeah. And then the owner of the company, Carlos Colon, said, you know, you're only 5'9". And at that time, they were using all the big guys, like from, if you were not working for Bern Gagne or WWE or the Graham family in Florida, you would be working in Puerto Rico. So you had all these big guys. So he said, I cannot use you on top. You're only 5'9", but your mic thing, I love that. And then I became the heel manager of Dula the Butcher and all these big villains. And then from there, they said, we're ending a relationship with a guy that used to do the hosting of the show, the interviews, and the production. And they said, you will be our mic guy and our TV guy and our front man from now on. And just a little bit of the story of my book. That was years before that. The Mexican promoter, Mendoza, Arturo Mendoza, said to me, one day you're not going to be a wrestler, and you're going to be the mic person, and your word, your battle cry is going to be a tangana. So he gave me like a dream, and later on in life, that became the reality.
Wow. That's awesome. That's awesome that he saw that, and he kind of, I don't know if you want to say prophesied or predicted that, A long time ago.
Yes.
Yeah. And for it to happen, it's almost always beautiful when somebody can speak in your life and then it actually happens. You know what I mean?
Yes, because they'll speak to you about the visions or prophesy, but then it is your obligation to do the right thing to make it happen. A lot of people just going to sit down and they say, okay, they said I'm going to be the best actor, the best boxer, the best rest of the best, you know, play-by-play guy, but you don't sit on your butt. You got to go out there and get better at what you're going to do.
I agree. You can never get complacent, you know. It doesn't seem like you are showing any signs of slowing down, man, by talking to you in these few short minutes. It doesn't seem like that at all.
No, I have already announced. I have announced my retirement from wrestling. The second month of 2025, I'm going to ask Vince McMahon to let me have for that show, which is going to be all the money that we do from pay-per-view and house gate will be donated to maybe two or three, you know, nonprofit, you know, orphanages and all that. And I want to have Carlos Cabrera, who was my partner for 17 years in Spanish WWF, WWE, and that will be my retirement the second month of 2025. My second book will come out on February 15th. So everything is already planned, because I want to make sure that the stuff that I do with AAA, or if I do as a special guest with AEW or my own shows, that wherever I go, I want the fans to know that that could be my last time there, so we could spend those moments together. I'm also a pastor, a preacher, I'm a apostle. Wow. So I do a lot of things around the world, and I think that's my time to say, okay, hasta la vista, baby, in wrestling. So I'm setting it up, so that would be my date.
Amen. And you know what? Hey, that's beautiful. That is so beautiful. It's like, you know, God has given you an assignment, and there's a point in time when your assignment is up. You know,
yes,
in a certain
place. Yes.
And that's huge, man. That you're one of these leaders that preach the gospel. So I give you nothing but respect in that as well.
Thank you, thank you. And I'm also I'm the sponsor of the ladies that are in jail in the Republic of Panama. The ones that are the international ladies that are in jail, because I went to preach there, and the ones that are from Panama, they take care of it. My church takes care of them that day. We also took care of the international ones, and, you know, God ministered my heart, and I saw the way they were living, the conditions, rats, a stinky place, and I said, you know, I got to do something about it. So I became their sponsor, so whatever they need and whatever I can afford, I do take care of that. And we also got orphanages, and we got kids. We feed kids in Central America. We do stuff here in the Bronx, New York. So I'm everywhere. I do in Lucha Libre 9 is my page. Between YouTube and Facebook and Instagram, we have about 1 million followers. And we use that not just to do lives and stuff like that and special interviews, but also to give a good message of hope to our younger audience also, and also to everyone about, setting themselves up for a vision and not to accept defeat. And so we keep it real. I am not into a religion. I am into a relationship, and I believe that we can all improve if we start believing in ourselves. And if we just start listening to the 6 o'clock news every day, we are going to be so depressed. Right now, you turn the TV on and you see cities burning and all of that. And it's so sad, because we're still fighting an enemy called coronavirus. And now our own people are destroying places where when they opened for people to go to work, they won't be able to go to work because it's no longer that place to work. So by doing something that is just about an injustice of what they did to George, they have really taken out of the context, and they have shot a policeman, is killed, the other one is, I mean, it's just horrible. So all of this leads me to, when I have an opportunity to talk and to use the microphone, to say, hey, don't let that destroy your future. You gotta keep on pray and keep on going.
I couldn't agree more with you, because I'll try not to stick on this too much, but you know, I have to stay off social media a little bit, because that's all I see is live videos of people destroying cities and destroying buildings, and I don't think that's the right way to go.
The sad thing is their own neighborhoods, places where probably their father and the mother will work there, they will not no longer have that. And the other thing is too, if the younger kids see the guys that are like 3 or 4 years older than them doing that, they're going to imitate the good and the bad things you do. And you don't want to create a new generation of people that when they get upset and something goes wrong and something, it's not right, the way you're going to say it's not right is by setting cars on fire, destroying property. So then what's the point? I mean, you are upset about some injustice, and now you're becoming that person that is actually also destroying things.
Right. And I'm going to get to a wrestling question, but it's almost like they're not even doing it for him anymore. It's almost like it's not even for George anymore. Like they're making they're selfish.
Yeah.
I'm not
saying that it's not a right cause about getting justice for George, but you know, I learned from Martin Luther King Jr. that you've got to do things the right way. If we don't teach our people to do, and that's what I do in wrestling. All this, there's people that have been in my life and that now are multimillionaires. I say to people, I have a picture when Bret the Hit, I did a tribute to him recently, one of the shows I did in Puerto Rico. And I have a picture of Bret the Hitman Hart, the first international trip that he did away from Stampede Wrestling from Calgary. And I have an abdominal stretch, which the Japanese call Cobra Twisto. I have it hooked on him, and you could see the rib cages. He was so skinny back then. And who knew that the guy that I was working with that day was going to become one of the real, real heroes of wrestling and one of the best in wrestling, Bret the Hitman Hart.
Isn't that something? You just never know. Never know how things will turn out. That's very, 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 very awesome. Obviously, I'd be remiss if I didn't get into your time with the WWF or WWE. How did that relationship formulate? And because you had a great career with them, how did that formulate? And could you just talk a little bit about that?
When Vince Jr. convinced everybody that Linda and him were people with a lot of money and bought out the other partners of the old what was before Worldwide Wrestling Federation and became then WWF and then now WWE. And he created the Hulkamania, the MTV Rock and Wrestling Connection. Well, at the time, I was married to his lady champion. Wendy Richter was my wife for 5 years. Ooh. And Vince wanted me to do his Spanish shows. But I said to him, Vince, I have always learned that it's never good when two people work like for the same company, because if one gets fired, usually the two of them get fired. At the time, you didn't have the rights that now you have, where you could do, you could sue somebody. It was, other times. So I said to Vince, I want to thank you, but my wife is your champion. I'd rather have her bring her check to our household, and I have my own from Carlos Angelique. And besides, at that time, wrestling was so hot in Puerto Rico and the Caribbean. I did English and Spanish shows, and we were selling out from Port of Spain, Trinidad to Panama. I was getting a bonus from the big shows. I was getting paid a lot of money, and companies like Bacardi companies and other beer companies, I will do their arm wrestling contests, their bikini contests, their summer festivals. And I was making money left and right and working in a paradise. Because from Puerto Rico, I used to do promotions in Jamaica, other places. And my job was to actually work in paradise, because at the time, all the islands were so beautiful. You go, you did promos in the morning, radio, TV, and then you have the rest of the day to just do whatever the heck you wanted. So I said, Vince, I don't think it's a good idea. So time went on, and then when I stopped working for what is now World Wrestling Council, WWC, by the way, which we created, the Universal Champion that Vince just made up. We had that title, and that is legit. If you go to the record books, when NWA was the number one wrestling body in the world, they had a match between their champion, Ric Flair, and the WWC champion, Carlos Colon, and the winner was going to be recognized as the Universal Champion. So that's a true fact. That match happened. Carlos Colon won. He became the first Universal Champion, and later on we know what Vince did. He just stole the Universal Championship like he created it. So anyway, they were not paying me the money that they owe me, so I stopped working for them, and I had my own bar, and went into the situation where it led to more women, drugs, alcohol, and I had my own bar, illegal gambling machines, and hooking up with the wrong crowd. It was just like that's why my book, I hope I get a chance to translate into English, is called A Tangana Ring of Temptation. And Savio Vega had talked to Bret Hart, and Savio had told Bret while they were in the tour in Germany, Hugo owns a bar in a very tough area in Puerto Rico, and he's making money, but he is in the wrong place with the wrong people. So they talked to Vince. And the story is, I'm going to try to make it very short. They told Vince about it. Vince said, yeah, I've been wanting to have him here for a while. So I'm closing my bar. It's like 5 in the morning. I get home. My wife is upset with my behavior. I've been drunk, used drugs. I'm passed out in the bed. The phone rings like at 7. And I think it's my good friend, Luke Williams from the Bushwhackers, which in Puerto Rico, they were not the Bushwhackers. They were like a tough building team called the New Zealand Shepherders, the Pastores of Nueva Zealand. So Luke has an art, and he will imitate voices and stuff. So I was used to him calling me and doing somebody famous voice from wrestling. And I think it's him introducing himself as Vince McMahon Jr. So I'm thinking it's Luke Williams from the Bushwhackers. And after like 10 minutes, I realized he's not laughing, he's not breaking character. And I said, this is not Luke Williams. And Vince said, no, this is Vince Jr. And he invited me to come over. And that was the start of my relationship officially with him. He helped me when my wife was going to meet me to marry. We were going to marry in South Carolina. I think the place is called South of the Border. She was finishing doing an MTV, big show on MTV with Hulk Hogan, and she was late for the flight. And Vince and his driver, they went through red lights, took her to the airport, and Vince got out of the limo carrying my wife's, you know, his champion's luggage and made her get the flight, which we later on married at South of the Border. So that was like the beginning of me saying, this guy is a cool guy. Because he didn't have to get out of his limo and do that. Right. He did that. So when I came to work for him, he invited me to his house. At the time, I had the long hair. I had like centurion ears, like Roman gladiators in my ears with diamonds. And another one that had like two biceps and a ruby in the middle. And I had the gold chains and the long hair. And I went through his mansion. And there was Pat Patterson and Bruce Pritchard. And Vince, when he hugs you and shakes your hand, brother, he says, if you're going to shake my hand, make it for real. He doesn't like those soft handshakes. And we talked, and he says, I want you to work for me. But if you work for me, the hair has to go. The gold chain has to go. It's going to be a tie and a suit, and the earrings got to go. And I said, Vince, if we make the right deal, we could do it. So he said, stay here 1 month. And he let me use his driver, which was like a sacred thing. Marcos is his driver. God bless him. He's Brazilian. And he was so nice to me. After 2 weeks, then they gave me a rented car. And for a month, I was staying in Stanford. And he would call me like every 3 days. How you doing? Blah, blah, blah. They took care of me. And then after the month, he sat down with me. And he says, I like the way you think. You're going to be – I wasn't going there to do the play-by-play. I was there to do creative and to produce shows. And that was it. I started with him. And then through my downfall, I got fired because I went into the drugs and I was arrested. But he gave me a second chance. I came back and I became a producer of their first Spanish show in Univision. It was called WWF Super Astro. So there was a Spanish guy, ex-wrestler, who fell into drugs, drug addict, alcoholic, gambler, and associated with criminals, and now he's getting a second chance. He accepted myself, accepted Jesus in jail. I came out. Vince was the only guy that believed in me, his wife, his kids, and Carlos Cabrera, Bruce Pritchard, Pat Patterson, Jim Ross. They didn't want me. Kevin Dunn didn't want me. And I was the first one to say, I don't blame you, because their point was, with the associations that Hugo has, they're going to try to kill him, and we're going to get shot and all this. And I told Vince that I was going to clean up my act. And I worked for another 50 years for him, a total of 70 years. And he was the guy that negotiated my contract, never let me down, was and still is, in my mind, one of the greatest visionaries of this business, which I disagree with stuff that goes on sometimes, like right now, some of the angles, I'm not happy with it, but that doesn't mean that I take the credit away from the guy that made what wrestling is right now and that has made so many millionaires. And for 17 years, he gave me a check that helped my family live very well.
Wow. Amen. Amen to that, man. Wow. See, you keeping it all the way real tonight.
Yeah. If you talk to me, I'm always going to come forward with the truth, because that's the way I preach. I'm a pastor, and the truth will set you free. And I cannot for an evangelist or an apostle when I do wrestling. I'm still the pastor. I'm still the apostle, the evangelist, and that doesn't die. On the contrary, it gives me an extension, and that's why I'm so happy, because I was able to talk to guys like Eddie Guerrero, who became a born-again Christian, Shawn Michaels, who was an evangelist, Sting, who is a pastor, Molly Holly, her and her husband are evangelists. So listen, it was a desert of non-believers in WWF, and I got cursed and everything. But when you see The Undertaker praying to Jesus right now, it was all worth it.
Oh, my God. I'm getting chills talking to you. See, you never know what situation God put you in to help others, you know. I'm a minister in my church, you know, and people ask me, how can you talk about wrestling and be a minister? You know, this is all God's – I'm on an assignment by God, you know.
Yes.
And God has me here for a reason.
Yes. Yeah. You don't know how many people are desperate, and then they tune into your show, and at least you calm them down. They get away from bad thoughts. And I think that if you do anything you do in life, do it with love and do it looking to do it in excellence. Do not do anything halfway. If you're going to do something halfway, don't do it.
That's right. That's right. And I know we only got it. We only got a few more minutes with you. I don't want to disrespect your time. Just two more questions and I'll let you go. What was the greatest match you caught in WWE? If there's even one, I hate to put you on the spot like that.
Yeah, it is tough, because if you follow wrestling, I was able to do from the Caribbean to WWF, but people forget that I did the Spanish NWA when NWA was bigger than WWF or WWE, and I did their Spanish, and I had the blessing of doing the Spanish for NWA in the United States, where you had, you know, from the boogeyman Jimmy Valiant to Greg the Hammer Valentine, to be able to call a match like from Harley Race and Ric Flair I was in the first Starrcade managing Abdullah the Butcher. I was there before pay-per-view started. When wrestling started on the closed circuit, it was through the big one, the Starrcade of in North Carolina. So I did that. So to me, I've been blessed to have either done the play-by-play of these matches or participated like a manager or was in that wrestling match. Like when I hear right now, New Japan Pro Wrestling, Wrestle Kingdom, 34,000. I said, listen, when I wrestled there, regular house at the Tokyo Dome, I wrestled in front of 40,000 people. And it wasn't like the Wrestle Kingdom. It was just part of wrestling being hot. And I said, you know, you look at what happens now. I remember being at the old Met Stadium, which is my team. Now it's City Park, but before it was Shea Stadium. I remember when Pedro Morales fought Bruno Sammartino, and they drew over 45,000 people without all this publicity that we have now and all that. So I seen the matches from the tragedies of Owen Hart dying at Kemper Arena in Kansas City to being at the table where Mankind landed when The Undertaker threw him up there. I was there when you heard like his lungs, like when you have a vacuum cleaner that goes like that. I heard like his lungs almost collapsing. I was next to the cage when the teeth came right through the lips. So I was there for the Iron matches of Bret the Hitman Hart, the masterpieces of Ric Flair against Shawn Michaels. You know, the Attitude Era, not knocking what we see right now, but the Attitude Era, man, you had from first matches to the last match. Every match had a story. We do understand that the main event had the bigger magnitude. But every match, you were hooked because there was a story. There was a buildup. There was so much respect for the fans. And, you know, I said to people, it's not like AEW or another company is going to hurt WWE. It's WWE hurting WWE. You know, not nobody else. It's just like some stupid ideas that make no sense, but because you have the control of all the media, you have the control of the biggest contracts in our history, over $1 billion for 5 years of Raw and SmackDown. So you become Curtis. So right now, it's almost a treasure when you get to see a good match because it's a microwave TV generation. It's like you have something to eat and you put it in a microwave for 30 seconds. There's no time like to go into the oven and put something for 1 hour. So gone are most of the times where you have the opportunity to see the real talent of the wrestlers. I'm looking forward to the Edge and Orton because what a challenge. No fans and just wrestling. I mean, it is natural. That's good. That's good.
And you know what? They're calling this the greatest match ever. So some kind of way, they're going to have to live up to that theme.
And it's going to be so hard because of the fact that if you don't have 60,000 fans like in a WrestleMania, no matter how good you are, the fans are the wrestlers' vitamins, their energy, their protein. The fans are as important as the actual performers in the ring. It is not just one side. You have to have them together in order to form what we call wrestling.
Amen. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, and I never knew that we were that valuable, the fans. I never knew we had played that much of a part in the story. And I see now that we do play a huge part in the story.
Yes. There will be no wrestling without the love of the true wrestling fans. We have to be specifying that because there's a lot of people that use the word "I am a fan" to hide the fact that they are wrestling haters and they just want to destroy what we love. And I always tell our fans. I said I could have more than 1 million followers in Lucha Libre Online, but we take a lot of people out every day because we don't like bullies. We don't like people that do any bullying, and we don't like people that use the word of a wrestling fan to insult our business. I believe that you could say, I didn't like the match. I don't like you, Hugo. I don't like your page. It's fine, but with respect. And when there's no respect, then you should not be even – you know, involved in having your opinion.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100% because there's a lot of haters out there for no reason, though, these days. All right. Before you go, do you want to talk about your book, how people can find your book or purchase your book or your YouTube show?
Yeah. It's in Amazon. You just go right into Amazon and you put Atangana, Ring de Tentaciones, or you put Google Hugo Savinovich's book in Amazon and as soon as I can, I'm going to try to have it translated. But if you speak Spanish, boy, that's like 344 pages of conversations with Vince McMahon, with Triple H. I carry you into the ring on play-by-play matches that I was involved in the ring as a talent and also as a manager and as a producer, as a creative. And I tell you the story, and I make you feel like you're right there with Triple H, with Shawn Michaels, with Vince McMahon, with Carlos Colon, with Chavica, with Abdullah the Butcher. You travel into the scenarios that led me into the drugs, into jail, my divorces, my passion for wrestling. It took 2 years of my life, 5-6 hours a day, long trips on a plane, 3 or 4 hours to make it a reality. No ghost riders, just true passion and respect for our business.
Wow. Awesome. That's I definitely if the coin's ready, I gotta get that book, man, for sure. I definitely do. I want to take this time out to say thank you again for coming on and accepting the invitation. I honestly never said this to a guest before, but I would love to do this again. Even though I would love to do double interviews again, but I never actually told anybody on air. I would love for you to come back on because it seems like you have so much to talk about. Maybe down the road we can get you back on, okay?
Yeah, and when we do, please remind me to tell you the story of Dwayne Johnson before he was famous. You got to tell me, Hugo, you told me to remind you about Dwayne Johnson before he was famous because you have to listen to that.
Okay, cool. I'm going to put that in my notes so I won't forget because I forget a lot.
God bless you, my friend, and God bless your audience. And always remember, in the middle of crisis, whatever you could do for elder people, whatever you could do for people that really need it. I don't believe in sending money to big organizations. I believe in you making it happen. When it's people helping people, there's no salaries being paid at an office, and then you hear that only 10% of what you gave them goes for the actual cause, and 90% for their offices. No, help people that you know that you're buying that grocery back for them and take it. And if you're, you know, you want to be social minded about the coronavirus and knock at the door with your mask and just leave the food and say, we love you, and help people and always be ready to advise our younger generation to dream big and stay out of trouble, because those will be nightmares that will take years from your vision.
Awesome. Hey, that's good. That's good knowledge and good advice to have. Thank you once again. You have a blessed night, and then we'll talk again, okay?
Atangana. Thank you.
All right. Hey, there you have it. That was former WWE Spanish commentator Hugo Savinovich. What a fantastic interview. I always say this. You never know how a conversation will go when you have a guest on your show, because these people don't know me, and I really don't know these people other than watching them on TV. So it's always cool when you can gain some chemistry with the person that you're interviewing and the person that you're talking to. I mean this when I say this. This is one of the better interviews that's ever been done on this show. So I'm very happy about that. I feel good tonight. Today was a long day. Today was a day of sort of sadness for me, but talking to him uplifted my spirits. And this is what this is all about. You know, you may be down 1 minute, and all it takes is a conversation like that, and you're up, and you're up, and you're ready to go. This is Wrestle Talk in the D. I want to thank everybody for listening tonight, those that decided to listen tonight on Facebook Live, those that are listening on Instagram Live, and those that are listening via blogtalkradio.com. We want to thank you all for giving us a chance. You know, there's a lot of podcasts, a lot of radio shows out there, but we appreciate the ones that decide to listen to us on a regular basis. You know, it's not about gaining 5,000, 2,000, 700 views. It's not about all that for me. It's about just bringing you good shows, and whoever listens, listen. I don't care if it's 3 people. I don't care if it's 20 people. And I don't care if it's 100 people. It's just, I just want to be able to give you the realest thing that I could possibly give to you. So thank you. God bless. Be safe. And we're going to end the show with a little Sasha Banks, all right?
Listen to critics.